Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 8th of November, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. We were hoping to have Matt Heimbach back today, but I found out he's actually not going to be here for another month. He's got some urgent business that he has to go away for, but he will be back in December. So you've got me for the month of November. I've got some interesting guests lined up for next week, and I've also got a very interesting guest today. I'm very pleased to welcome Jez Turner from the London Forum. Jez, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm bringing you from a very cold and damp and wet and frosty London. But I'm well.
Well, at least you're in Britain, and at least you're outside. You haven't actually been put on remand, which I think was really, really, really good news, considering everything that's happened to other political dissidents recently. So that's one good thing. We've also got some good news to talk about near the end of the podcast. But really, I wanted to get your views on this pretty Patel situation, Fatty Patel, as I call her. She seems to have put on a lot of weight.
It's tricky for tell. She's not pretty, she ain't well. And who paid for those holidays to Israel?
Exactly.
Theresa May, the Jew, she's in their pay. It's clearer and clearer every day. Yes. And as for that Lord Pollock, you know who Lord Pollock is? He's the chairman of the Conservative Friends for Israel. He's not a real lord. His blood's not blue. He's just a Jew. I should be a poet, shouldn't I, really?
You should be. I think those are quite inspired there, rhyming couplets.
It turns out, originally, Downing Street was denying that they knew anything about Priti Patel. To give anyone who's not from Britain a bit of a backstory, she's a member of the government, a conservative government. She's an Asian lady. I presume she's Hindu, or perhaps Sikh, I don't know. And she went on holiday to Israel, and when she was there, she met several senior government ministers of Israel, including everyone, really. And in on these meetings was the conservative chair of the Friends of Israel, Lord Pollock. No, Lord Pollack, it starts. P-O-L-A-K. And this was all unofficial stuff. Now, the theory goes she's running to be prospective prime minister, and she's getting her cards cleared with all the Jews. You know, the Jews are saying, yeah, she's okay. She's better than Theresa May, even. You know, she's more our way. So she was getting the sort of, the all clear from them. And apparently, this was all unofficial. Now it turns out, bizarrely, of all places, a journalist in the Jewish Chronicle has revealed that these meetings were known about and were perhaps even approved, which all just goes to show how corrupt our politicians are and how much in the pay of the Jews they are. We've got Theresa May. I mean, she is bending over backwards for this minority. You know, she's really doing everything in her power because basically she has no character, no talent, no skill. She's only there because you know who's put her there. A bit like John Major. She didn't win that election, really. She just got put there. And in return for that, she's doing everything she can for them. Rather like John Major gave all our gold away to them on Black Wednesday, which is where George Soros made millions, perhaps even billions, out of the British taxpayer.
Was that Gordon Brown that did that? He gave all the gold away as well, didn't he? I didn't know John Major had too.
He gave some more gold away. Yeah, that was a later thing. John Major was a bit earlier. And John Major came in as Prime Minister after Thatcher was sort of kicked out by her own party. He didn't win an election, he just got to power. Anyway, he was a former Rothschild banker, clerk, whatever, and they put him in position on the understanding that once he was in power, he'd give him loads of money. And what he did that via the stupid scheme of joining the ERM, the exchange rate mechanism, which is something that's joining the euro, basically, a step to joining the euro. And everyone said, this is ridiculous. It will lead to the money traders becoming very rich. And, of course, it did. But that was the whole plan. And Theresa May is just like that, really. She's one of those sort of great people who they put into positions of power. And she does what she's told. She recently, the first time ever, a British Prime Minister has ever invited the Jewish community, shall we say, into Downing Street to celebrate Rosh Hashanah, which is their New Year. So she did that. The first thing she did in power was go and thank them in North London, what we call the Jewish Republic of North London. She went there and thanked them for putting it there. And, this Priti Patel, this story is desperately being, downplayed by their friends in the media. But other people are not having it. You know, they talk about the Jewish lobby. Nigel Farage has mentioned this, the Jewish lobby in America. But we have a Jewish lobby here. They run the government.
it's so easy to see, isn't it? I mean, she must have thought that it was perfectly fine to go over there and talk to all these Jews because she knows how powerful the Jews are and she knows how they control the British government. That's exactly what she was trying to do, was to get in there with them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it gets her tick in the box. It gets Theresa May tick in the box as well, I suppose. And with any other country, it wouldn't do it. They wouldn't dare do it. But with Israel, it's okay. I mean, this is Theresa May. I mean, just think of the hypocrisy of this, right? Theresa May says she is against female genital mutilation. This is what young Muslim girls get done to them in parts of Africa. They cut bits off, put it mildly, right? She's against this. And yet, there she was in a newspaper recently at a school with seven young girls, right? And these girls were going to have transgender operations, right, to become boys. Theresa May is all for this. She wants to encourage this, right? Now, you can't get much worse female genital mutilation than having that operation. And she's in favour of it, and it's all paid for on the NHS, paid for out of your taxes, listener. Your taxes are paying for this. You know, they want to lower the age of they want children to have this operation. They want children to become girls, to become boys, boys to become girls, younger and younger and younger. I mean, it's just, this is the worst sort of abuse you could ever think about, and they're encouraging it.
They haven't locked up anyone for that either, for this, this female genital mutilation. You know, they said that they want to be against it and they want to stop it, and yet there's not one person been locked up for it yet. It has a 15-year prison sentence. Nobody's been locked up for it. And as you say, they're spending all the NHS money on these gender reassignment surgery, and they're saying, well, we don't have enough money for the NHS. We have people that are on waiting lists. And yet, this Priti Patel, what she was doing was arranging for our foreign aid money, which we shouldn't be giving away anyway, but she was arranging for our foreign aid money to be given to the Israeli army.
Israel is the third world's biggest superpower. This is Jane's military weakness, isn't it? She's a very well-respected military journal. Jane's, it's called. You can look it up online. And they say Israel is more powerful than Russia. It is the number three world superpower. They have more nuclear bombs than we do. And yet we're giving them our foreign aid. I mean, and talking of military, just to change subject slightly, everyone keeps banging on about Brexit and how the young want to remain. You know, they voted to remain and they're being betrayed, or they haven't got a chance to vote remain because they were too young and they're being betrayed. Hang on, this is the same young people who, in a recent article, 25% thereof will not wear the poppy to respect our war dead. You know. Anyway, that's just me on a slight tangent there. You know, there's so much hypocrisy in our mass media and our political elite. It really does.
Well, I think one of the reasons why this is being highlighted, which people haven't actually spoken up about, is that it's the Muslims in the Labour Party that are making the fuss about this because of the Palestinian issue. Because when she was over there, she only spoke to these Israelis. And of course, she's only speaking to them because they're only going to do things for the Jews. But protocol is that she should also be speaking to Palestinian Muslims, while she's over there. So this is a big part of it as well, that she's showing bias towards the Jews. But that's basically what the British government does anyway. But it just likes to make this little show, this pretense that actually we're talking to the Palestinians as well. So you've got a Muslim influence in here as well. And I think she must be Hindu, as you say, either Hindu or Sikh. As the Muslims
are usually Hindus or Sikhs, usually Hindus, yeah. I mean, the thing is, this is 100 years after the Balfour Declaration. You know, this is when, in order to carry on having our soldiers slaughtered on the Western Front, in order to carry on fighting World War One, because we couldn't afford to in terms of money, we negotiated a loan with the Rothschilds, and they gave us the money to carry on fighting, carry on having our people genocided, in return for promising them Palestine. And 100 years on, here we are, betraying the Palestinians again. Let's not forget, a third to a quarter of Palestinians are Christian or were Christian. I mean, 500,000 of these Palestinian Christians live in Chile. You know, there's millions all over the Middle East and everywhere. You know, these refugees aren't allowed to return to Israel. You know, so for Jews to tell us we should accept refugees and asylum seekers is absolutely another case of hypocrisy, really.
Total hypocrisy, isn't it? Open borders for everywhere else, apart from Israel. They'll put them in camps there. They'll even sterilize the Negroes that actually try to get into Israel because they know how quickly they breed. And they've got that huge, great wall around the place. There's nobody more hypocritical than the Jews, I think, especially the Jews that are involved in the media. And just the reason why they're able to cover up so much of what really goes on is because they have this stranglehold over the media. And as you say, I mean, it's in the Jewish Daily Forward that it's...
Could you just hear that? I had a thing of Africans.
Yeah. Africans invading our podcast.
Get away, clear off.
I was just going to say, it's you know, it's the Jewish Daily Forward, which is exposing the fact that Theresa May did actually know about these visits to the Jews. And yet the rest of the British media is claiming that she didn't know about it. The British government are claiming that they didn't know about it. And yet the Jewish media is saying, oh, yes, she did know about it. And we've got proof of it.
They're so confident, you see. They're so confident. But this shows, I mean, a good article by Andrew Joyce in the Occidental Observer about the Jews as a hostile elite. An article about Archbishop Agobard of Lyon, who tried to stop Jewish slave traders sending Christians to North Africa and Muslim Spain. He tried to prevent this. Many of the young boys who were sent there were castrated because they fetched a higher price. And he tried to appeal to the King of France, Louis the Pious, to stop this. And Louis Pious said, no, shut up. I'm getting paid good money by the Jews for this. You can read the article, Andrew Joyce, Occidental Observer, all about this. The Jews as a hostile elite. Well, I think the fable about St. Patrick, about kicking the snakes out of Ireland, I think he kicked something else out of Ireland. We should take St. Patrick's example. They weren't snakes at all. But yeah, it's our elite are at best cowardly, at worst, completely in their pay. Completely in their pay. Some are brainwashed, but yeah, but you know, it's a bit of everything, isn't it? Brainwashing, cowardly, and being bribed, bullied, blackmailed. Yeah,
it's bad enough that this Priti Patel is not even British anyway. She shouldn't even be an MP.
Exactly. Look, if you want to stop female genital mutilation, I would stop it within a year, probably within a week, actually. Stop immigration, start repatriation. Four words, that would solve a lot of issues in Britain. And it would certainly stop FGM.
Well, it needs to be done. Now, when you think about it, the Edict of Expulsion from 1290, that is still on the books. It's never been overturned. The Jews are not supposed to be in Britain. They're not supposed to set foot in the country. They're here as illegal aliens. The king banished them from the realm. Every single one of them.
Yes.
In 1290. So why isn't this being enacted? Well, the fact it isn't being enacted is because the Jews are in control of our government. And they're breaking the law by being here.
It's so simple, isn't it? So simple. So simple.
We need to advocate for, well, I don't know how we can do it, but because those laws cannot be overturned. Once the king makes a law, it can't be overturned.
You know, they can do whatever they want to do, though, can they? I mean, all I can say is diversity ensures our lives are not dull.
Ensures the podcast.
You know, that way. I mean, suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope. plenty of character building in London this evening.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. It certainly does. You know, it's a struggle that makes us stronger. Certainly does make us stronger. And I think you wanted to talk a little bit about Remembrance Day or something. The National Front have their regular march on Remembrance Sunday, and we've got that coming up, haven't we, Jez?
Yes, it's been going since 1967. It began to celebrate the Rhodesian war dead who gave their lives for the British Empire and for Britain, and were ignored by the British government because of the racial connotations. And later on, so a wreath was not laid at the cenotaph in Whitehall for the Rhodesian war dead, and this also was extended to South Africa. They weren't commemorated either. So the National Front said, we're not having this. We're going to lay a wreath at the cenotaph for the Rhodesians and the South Africans. And I've been going to this on and off for quite a few years. My first one was 86, I think, 87. And it's always a very peaceful affair. Only once I've ever experienced the opposition try and stop it. And we were marching down Victoria Street, drums rolling, flags unfurled, Union Jacks unfurled, and all the various British flags and Empire flags and heavy. And the Reds got in the way, and the police just trundled them out of the way, just dragged them out of the way. You know, no nonsense. And the lookers on, you know, the passers by, because London is full of ex-servicemen during this day, of course. And everyone was on our side. Usually it's very peaceful. We form up at Bresenden Place opposite Victoria Station, 1 o'clock. Do come along, all patriots, welcome. Everyone's welcome. I just wear a poppy. We march down Victoria Street to the cenotaph, lay a wreath, and then we walk to the Embankment Gardens and have a small rally. But it's a time of year when everyone thinks of sacrifice and bravery and courage. And my view is these people show the ultimate courage to keep Britain free, free of foreigners, free of foreign invaders. And the least we can do is go along there and show our respects. If you are concerned about the press, photographing you or from just wear a pair of dark glasses, you know. You'd be more than welcome. 1 o'clock, Bresenden Place, opposite Victoria Station. As I say, I mean, when I used to go in the 80s, the South African Embassy sent an official along because even then they weren't allowed to lay a wreath. And of course, the other people who can't lay a wreath are the British servicemen and police who died in Palestine, in the Palestine campaign. Do you know, more British soldiers and police died in the Palestine campaign, it was only 3 years long, than had died in all the Gulf Wars and Iraq Wars and Afghan conflicts combined. It didn't show you how many people died, that was a lot of people.
And more people died in Palestine. Yeah, so this was after the war, when the British were in
World
Palestine.
War II to free the Jews, and in return they started killing us in Palestine.
And not one of those victims is...
Look up Lord Moyne, who was killed in Egypt by them. Look up King David Hotel. Look up Sergeants Pace and Martin. A lot of soldiers were killed. I think it was about 1,000 were killed in total. And a few British civil servants were out there, and a few British police, Palestine police force. They're not even now sure, but it's 1,000 plus were killed, which is more than, if you add up the Iraq and the Afghan conflicts, put them all together, that's still more than those conflicts.
This was by these Jewish terrorist groups as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Ergun and the Stern Gang. There's a very good, if you go to London Forum YouTube channel, there's a very good talk by Peter Rushton on this. And the usual excuse the Jews make is that, oh, this was just an extreme terrorist group. But in actual fact, the King David Hotel bombing was carried out by a coalition, a combined alliance of the various groups who planned it and carried it out. So it wasn't just the Ergun or the Stern Gang or the Haganah or whatever. It was a whole lot of them. And that's how they repair us, you know, that's how they repair us. Israel is very useful because it shows you the true nature of these people when they're not pretending. It shows you how they really act when they've got the upper hand.
It wasn't one of these terrorist groups, didn't they get elected to prime minister, or they've been politicians in the modern day Israeli government? I thought they haven't disowned them, these terrorist gangs.
Most of the elite in the Israeli government served in the various Palestine terrorist groups, the Zionist terrorist groups. Most of them did.
So we got the people that fought for us in Rhodesia. They're not allowed to have a wreath because that's not politically correct. We've got 1,000 people that were killed by the Jewish terrorist gangs while we were out there trying to build the place up and improve the place so it was had all the trappings of modern civilization so that the Jews could go there and build a colony, and they killed 1,000 of us, and we're not allowed to lay a wreath for them either. We're not allowed to honour them as our war dead because we're not even supposed to know about them, let alone it being politically incorrect. How can they get away with this? How can they get away with this? How come people don't know about this? There must be families of these people that were killed.
A lot of families who lost people in Palestine, lost their servicemen in Palestine and their policemen, did wake up, you know, and you even find now a lot of people in the nationalist movement had relatives who were killed in Palestine by the Zionist terrorists. This phrase, the stab in the back, you know this phrase perhaps from the First World War and the German experience, stab in the back. Well, that's what they do. They stab us in the back all the time. You give them the Balfour Declaration, you give them Palestine, what do they do? They stab you in the back. You fight a world war for them. They stab you in the back. You know, it's what they do because they can't fight you face to face because they would lose.
So Germany got that after the First World War, and we got the stab in the back after the Second World War. But it's something that most people don't know about. I know you and Peter Rushton have tried to highlight this. You've got a website and you have you lay a wreath for these servicemen as well at a certain time of year. What's the name of the website? It escapes my mind for the minute.
The website, it's Forgotten British Heroes. And most of the speeches are on the London Forum YouTube channel. The website's pretty good as well, Forgotten British Heroes. There's also quite a good website run by a British servicemen's organization, Palestine Veterans. Have a look for that. But yes, we laid a wreath in Bristol this year at a grave. Sergeant Pace's grave. He was kidnapped, tortured, executed, shall we say, and then hung with piano wire in an olive grove and his body booby-trapped. And some of the soldiers who cut him down to rescue with the body were injured as well. And this is now a tourist place, and a Zionist tourist trade in Israel's park. And people celebrate the fact that they killed Pace and Martin. It reminds me a bit of the two sergeants who were killed in Northern Ireland. They were grabbed out of their car in a funeral cortege and killed, you know, that sort of thing. We try and do something every year. We had a meeting in Bristol, a very, very good meeting in Bristol, later Reeve. And it's something that the left, the non-Jewish left, are uneasy with because the left is controlled by the Jews and a lot of people in the left know this, but they don't really want to talk about it. And they sympathize with they're not very keen on Zionism, the non-Jewish left wingers. That's the only good thing they have going for them. But most of them are silent on immigration taking their jobs, are silent on multiracialism, multiculturalism, the European Union sort of thing. But yeah, every year we do that. So have a look online and get in touch.
Now, we hear a lot about the atrocities that ISIS carry out and that these Muslim terrorists carry out, but they're pretty hard to beat that one. You know, hanging the guy with piano wire, booby trapping his body. Was he a part of the army or was he just an innocent bystander?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Was he a part of the army? The one that was hung up by piano wire and his body was booby trapped. Was he part of the army or was he just?
Yes, they were two sergeants, Sergeant Stacey and Martin. They were intelligence corps sergeants, and because of their role, they were they weren't in barracks. They were out and about gathering information, and they were captured and they were held in a very small underground cell, and they were tortured and what have you. And they were both hung up in the Olive Grove and booby trapped. And this picture actually was very famous. It was on the front page of the Daily Express. And, you know, the Jews didn't like this, so they stole the picture from the archives, but I think they managed to copy it. And you occasionally see it held up by Arab protesters now and then in the Middle East to sort of point out that Israel isn't our friend.
Well, we were over there trying to keep the peace as well as building the country up. I heard an interview with someone that was helping out over there. I think he was a police officer. And he was saying is how they were built the railways over there and built the roads and the infrastructure and how much they liked the Palestinian Arabs and how they had no idea that these Jews were going to treat them so badly once they actually got there.
I mean, some began to realize, but it was too little too late. Rather like today, they didn't realize that immigration would be that much. They didn't realize that many were coming. I mean, there's a phrase in ancient Greek, it's lave bosias. It means live quietly without attracting attention. And this was something that a lot of ancient Romans used to say you must do to avoid getting exiled or imprisoned or executed. Ovid was exiled for not keeping quiet, and everyone who was anyone was exiled or in prison. But you can't not speak out. You can't say nothing, because when you think about it, Sven, I want all your listeners to think about this too. Right? If you leave, if you're in a car accident and you leave the scene of the accident without reporting it, that in itself is a crime. If you see a crime take place and you don't report it, that is a crime. If you see genocide taking place and you don't speak out against it, that is a crime. So you have a choice. You can commit a crime by not speaking out, or you can commit a so-called crime by speaking out. But one's not a real crime, because you know, speaking out against genocide is not a crime, but you'll get imprisoned for it, you'll get fined for it, you'll get punished for it. But in the long term, in a historical sense, in the grand scale of things, you know, you have to speak out, because not speaking out is the real crime.
It's our duty to, isn't it? It's like it's your duty to your people, the same as it's your duty to society to report on a crime if you see it happening. It's your duty to your people to report on crimes that are being done to them. And I think that this is why they try to say that we're not a people, we're not a nation, you don't have any rights, as there is no indigenous British people, so therefore you have no loyalty to them. Your loyalty should be to this amorphous mass of humankind, and loyalty to that means that you become anti-white and you don't stand up for your own people. This seems to be the logic of it, but it's totally the opposite of the way that reality is. This is our ethnicity. Our ethnicity is being threatened by immigration and by the Jews that are encouraging the immigration. And it's our duty to speak up about this and to warn people about it, so that people know the truth of what's going on. And if you are persecuted for it, then you know, wear that with pride. Wear that with pride. You know that you're doing something if you're being persecuted for it.
Yes, we are not just individuals. Individuals do not survive. They do not last. So individualism is evil. If you watched, there was a very good scene in a television series called The Crown about the life of the young queen, Elizabeth II, and Prince Philip, about their young lives, and she came to the throne, and the problems she had to deal with. And there's a very good scene where her personal private secretary, who's a man of the old school, tells her, gives her a talking to, and says, individualism is evil. Now that is very powerful. Individualism is evil. The minute you start being selfish and forget about your race, forget about your nation, forget about your culture, forget about your traditions, forget about your people, your family, and you start being an individualist. You start being selfish. And that is evil. And that was the old school way of thinking of it. And this PPS was replaced by some modern chap who, you know, do whatever you want to do, laissez-faire, you know, whatever. But Solzhenitsyn says, you know, you can't live by lies. You can't pretend evil is good and good is evil. You just cannot do that. It has psychological effects on you. And to not speak out about what's happening to our nation, to not speak out against the corrosive effect that immigration is having on our society, you know, the disintegrating effect that it's having, the divisions it's creating, is not an option.
It'll just wear down on your conscience. You know, the guilt will just wear down on your conscience. You know, to not speak out against it is not an option. We have to speak out against it. Individualism is evil. Nationalism is good.
Individualism is destroying society. I mean, you mentioned a story about some person who killed a baby today or something.
That's all right. We will cover that tomorrow because we've got to finish now.
Right.
Jez, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Please get along to the Remembrance Sunday meeting on the 11th, and I'll put the details of that in the article that goes with this. I'll be back with Dr. Johnson tomorrow. So until then, hail victory.
You've been listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan.